Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Football Insiders, our last episode before the NFL draft. Now, somewhere in Oz, the Munchkins are singing, "Ding dong, the witch is dead," because in the nation's capital, it looks like Dan Snyder's on his way out and the Commanders are on their way to somebody new. Additionally, we're going to talk about the record-setting contract for Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles, and what does that mean for Lamar Jackson's bid to get a fully guaranteed contract? And as I mentioned, we're 1 week away from the NFL draft, and a big change in the last couple of years has been the way cognitive testing is done. We're going to talk a bit about what that cognitive testing is and what it means for this year's current crop of quarterbacks and why some may be rising and some may be falling. With me to do it each and every week, as always, two of the best this industry has to offer, Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst Mr. Trey Wingo and Pro Football Network senior NFL draft analyst Mr. Tony Pauline. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing today?
Good. We're a week away. It's exciting. It's coming, and it's feel like we've been talking about this forever. So we're on the precipice here of getting to where we need to be.
Tony, how you doing, bud?
Okay, you know, it's funny. You talk to people in league, especially agents, and this is a scary time because, you know, they don't want to go to ESPN or some CBS or open up the paper and read something bad about their player. So this is kind of the time where they hope it's really quiet time.
Yeah, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Or even Pro Football Network.
I know that guy. All right. Well, look, let's start off with some of the big news that came out last week. And one of the first news stories to break was the potential sale of the Washington Commanders. Reports that Dan Snyder has accepted a bid in excess of $6 billion. Trey, am I alone in feeling like it kind of sucks that Dan Snyder gets to walk away with that kind of money, even if it's good for the NFL?
Look, Dan Snyder, there's Dan Snyder, the businessman, and Dan Snyder, the person, or as we all should refer to him, Mr. Snyder. So, I mean, like he bought the team for $800 million, and he's going to walk away with $6 billion, unless this other bid of over $7 billion is approved. But there's some real dark corners in that bid. I'm not sure how much of that bid is real. A lot of back by Brian Davis, the former Duke basketball player, and some of his investors, and people are trying to really vet who those investors are. Vibes. I think, it's correct. And there's some people who have real questions about his own evaluations of his company. So I think it's going to be the end of the Snyder era, and this is very, very good for the NFL. Now, he's going to make his money, and he's still facing multiple lawsuits and all kinds of things, and he's going to have to deal with that. But the best part of this is we won't have to deal with him anymore. By any objective measure, he was a terrible owner, except in the fact that he made a lot of money. But in terms of how the franchise is viewed, and how the perception of the team has been, it's been a disaster. He's never had a winning head coach. He's had very little success on the field. FedEx Field literally poops on their fans on more than one occasion. So it's just awful. So go take your money and just go. Go away, Dan. Hide. Go buy a remote island somewhere where everyone has to call you Mr. Snyder, and we don't care anymore.
Tony, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well, you know, especially as it comes to how the Washington Commanders, the football side of things, are they going to be impacted at all regarding this draft or future drafts?
Well, I don't know about this draft because, you know, everything is in process and Snyder's likely still going to be the owner on draft day. You go back, you remember Rich Kotite when he was the head coach and general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles when the Eagles were sold, talking about how he's in the war room and he had the old owner over one shoulder and the new owner over the other shoulder. So, I don't think it's going to impact this draft. Hopefully, you know, moving forward, they let the football people run the operation. And as we talked about, Snyder in the past flying around the nation on his own private jet to go personally scout quarterbacks in college.
Because that's his strength. I mean, that's how Snyder, rolls.
And that will hopefully end. And remember, 2 weeks ago, I said the day is May 12th. He wants this done by May 12th so he doesn't have to pay all those bonuses in the contracts that he signed with players this year. So it's probably, it should be a quick sale. The owners want him out. He doesn't want to pay those bonuses. You know, I think that will be the big news right after.
Yeah, interesting. The draft. We'll continue to pay attention to the story and see what happens, especially as Trey alluded to, you know, where the funding is actually coming from and if that does hold up a potential league approval. All indications are that it'll probably go through without an issue, but never say never, certainly in this league. The other big news, big story that came was Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts signing a long-term deal with the Philadelphia Eagles, getting a big-time contract extension that is record-breaking in a number of ways. It makes him the highest-paid player in NFL history, at least in terms of you know, annual average and total money. Of course, it is not to be confused with the fully guaranteed contract that was signed by Deshaun Watson, and that seems to be the ceiling and the floor now, Trey. You have Hurts' contract and you have Watson's contract. What does this mean for Lamar Jackson?
It's not good news for Lamar Jackson, and it's not good news for the Ravens and trying to assuage Lamar Jackson on a couple of levels. So there's a lot of layers to this, right? So let's deal with the first one. Good for Jalen Hurts. He performed. He got his money. And it is interesting how you want to, like, always sort of layer the minutia. Oh, it's the richest contract because it's the most per year, but it's not fully guaranteed. So in reality, it really isn't the richest contract. He gets the most money per year, but it's not the most money given to a player. That money still belongs to Deshaun Watson. So you have to sort of decipher the messages that people are trying to tell you or give you when they give you this information about what the contract is. What it is a reward for a job well done for Jalen Hurts. But I got to say, I'm a little surprised that the Eagles went all in this early on Jalen Hurts. And here's why. And it has nothing to do with Jalen at all. Do you remember Carson Wentz's second season?
I do very well.
2017, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, was on the way to being an MVP until he tore his ACL running into the end zone against the Rams at the Coliseum. Now, they went on to win the Super Bowl that year without him. And then the next year, Carson was okay. And then it all fell apart. So I'm kind of surprised that the Eagles, having seen this play out already once before after two seasons and go all in on a quarterback, are doing it again. And, you know, I hope for them and their fan base that this doesn't unfold the same way it does with Wentz. I don't think it will, but still I'm a little surprised. Like, you know, we always tell our kids, don't touch the stove. Don't touch the stove because it's hot. And then you touch the stove and you get burned. How he touched the stove again? Like, he touched the stove again here, and he's hoping for better results. And I think there will be better results because I think there's a maturity level with Jalen that did not exist and still may not exist with Carson Wentz and understanding what the position is besides playing on the field. But I am a little surprised, Tony, that you know, the numbers are very similar, and Jalen Hurts actually has less experience than Carson Wentz did in the NFL before he got the big payday, and the Eagles have done it again.
Yeah, but this is the shape of things to come, isn't it? I mean, Deshaun Watson sits on the sidelines for a year. He's given that massive contract. The Browns trade away all that draft capital for a guy who hasn't played football for a year, and you know he's got baggage. So I think with the Eagles, they give him the money. The Eagles, you know, this is the day and age in football where you got to strike when the iron's hot. And they probably figure the iron's hot now. Give him his money. We got to try and win as many Super Bowls as possible as we can over the next 4 to 5 years. I'm wondering if this changes their draft strategy, because Howie Roseman has had a lot of success. He's an outstanding general manager. Do they now does he go away from his draft strategy and get those pieces to help Jalen Hurts? Do they take Bijan Robinson with the 10th pick of the draft? Does he go basically away from what's made him successful now because he wants to get those last few pieces in that will help Jalen Hurts, that will help, you know, the Eagles get over that hump and, you know, win the Super Bowl rather than blow it in the last 30 seconds?
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario because, you know, Trey, if you remember when we did our first show of the year for this season, I talked about, you know, potential regression coming from Josh Allen, and he took a step back. Brian Daboll had left. The weapons were a little bit reduced with Cole Beasley having retired. Jalen Hurts is entering a similar situation this year. Yeah, they're coming off a Super Bowl run. He's coming off of a near MVP campaign. But you know, Shane Steichen is gone. He's in Indianapolis. He's got to learn a whole new system. The defense is going to take a step back, you know, this year. They've lost a lot of pieces in free agency.
They're not getting 70 sacks.
It's a big story. And Tony, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Would the Eagles be thrilled to walk out of the draft rebuilding that defense? Maybe Jalen Carter slides to them at 10. They get a Trent Simpson like player at 30. Like, would that be an ideal situation for them, or should they focus on the offense and Jalen Hurts?
I still think they got to look at best player available, except for maybe wide receiver. Here's the thing I'm hearing about the Eagles. You know, I mentioned Edebowari last week. I'm hearing now the Eagles may go to more of a 3-4 alignment, and they may have three defensive linemen. So we'll have to see how that plays out through the draft. To answer your question, I don't know. I'm sure that they, you know, they would be happy to get two outstanding players in the first round, and then get extra pieces later on. Whether that's a Bijan Robinson at 10. Jalen Carter, if he falls down there, you talk to people around the league, they still think that Seattle could swipe up Jalen Carter at 5. Wow. He may not make it down there. I think they're in a good situation. They're going to have options, whether it's a Bijan Robinson, maybe it's a Jalen Carter, maybe it's one of the top offensive linemen, which would also help Jalen Hurts.
If you're Lamar Jackson, you're ticked right now, to put it lightly, for two reasons. One, this contract is an indication that Lamar Jackson is not getting a guaranteed contract, fully guaranteed contract. This is just not going to happen. Okay. That's the reality, because if Jalen's not getting one, and look, you can make all the arguments. Lamar's had a longer, more successful run in the NFL, which is 100% true. He's had an MVP season. You could make the case that Jalen would have been behind Patrick Mahomes this season for MVP, but it was significantly behind Patrick Mahomes. But this is an indication that what Lamar Jackson wanted and thought he would get because of the Deshaun Watson contract isn't going to happen. There hasn't been a single quarterback contract come since the Lamar Jackson deal that was fully guaranteed. And guess what? The Ravens aren't going to do that. So now it creates a little bit more of a bitterness between Lamar and the Ravens. And it also creates a bitterness because Lamar has done more over a longer period of time for the Ravens than Jalen Hurts has done for Philadelphia. And so now the chasm, I believe, between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson has not shrunk. It's gotten wider because of this contract. I mean, he has many more wins in the NFL than Jalen Hurts. He has an MVP to show for it. And one of the reasons that the Ravens are somewhat concerned about injury is because that's the way they choose to employ Lamar Jackson. The way they use him creates possibilities for him to be injured, and now they're using that against him. Listen, the signing of Odell was cool, but whatever goodwill that created potentially between Lamar and the Ravens, this contract, I think, takes it all back, because he's like, okay, they rushed in after 2 years to take care of their guy. I'm 5 years into this, and I still don't have a deal, and I'm not getting the guaranteed contract, and now they're holding the fact that I get injured a little bit because of the way they use me, and now they're holding that against me. That's some bull you know what if you're Lamar Jackson. So I don't think this contract helps that situation in any way, shape, or form, Tony.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm still wondering why Lamar Jackson hasn't signed an agent, because it's going to get more complex, and what's going on off the field is going to take away from his focus on the field. And you know, the intricacies, and I'm sure he knows a lot about it, but he's always going to miss something. And at this point in time, I'm really shocked that since there's been no movement, he's made his demands, he hasn't brought in an experienced agent to say, you know, take over for me and let me know what happens.
Yeah, it is a curious situation, because as you said, now there is going to be added complexity to these contracts. He's not going to get the fully guaranteed contract that he, you know, reportedly is looking for. And that means it's only going to get harder from here to negotiate a fair deal using the Jalen Hurts contract as the floor. You know, the owners have been stamping their feet, guys, begging us to look the other way, that the Watson deal was not the precedent. It was an outlier. Well, this Jalen Hurts contract now gives them, in their minds, the precedent they want to negotiate off of. The only hope Jalen Hurts has is if Joe Burrow gets a fully guaranteed deal before any of this goes down. So we'll.
And again, that would just make it worse for Lamar and the Ravens again. Like, any contract, whether it's not guaranteed or guaranteed, is actually just going to make it worse.
Yep. So hopefully we see how that gets resolved in the future. Interesting. The Ravens have been looking at quarterbacks in the first round of this NFL draft. So we'll see how this all plays out. There is never a dull moment in NFL draft season. I did want to quickly talk about the NFLPA survey that came out comparing playing services. Trey, we were texting a little bit about this prior to the show. You know, overwhelmingly, the consensus seems to be players believe that they're safer and it's better for their bodies to be playing on grass. Meanwhile, high school, college, and pro stadiums everywhere are investing more money than ever into turf fields and playing surfaces. Trey, what do you think this means for, you know, not just the quality of play on the field, but the NFL's overall commitment to player safety?
Well,
I mean, do I need to say it?
I mean, that's a nice thing that they say. You know, but if they're really committed to player safety, they wouldn't be playing 17 and they wouldn't even be considering 18. They wouldn't be considering, you know, flexing Thursday nights. Let's just be, look, it's cool that they say it, but let's just be honest. Like, action speaks louder than words. And it is interesting because we're coming off a Super Bowl where there were a lot of complaints about the grass being so slippery. Now, there weren't any significant injuries because of the grass, but a lot of players slipped on that grass in Arizona. So, listen, any player will tell you they'd much prefer to play on grass. It's just they just feel like the give is there. It works better with the human body, but there's always a money factor involved. And let's not pretend like there isn't, okay? The NFL is really good at making money. They're a $20 billion a year industry. And if they think there's a way to spend less so they can make more with the ease of turf and the less maintenance that belongs when you have a turf field, they're going to do it.
Absolutely. And I sent you a couple of videos, you know, a couple of the players that I train, they will only work with me on grass. In fact, one of the players, you know, we work out in the outfield of a baseball field that is only a few feet away from a multi-million dollar turf complex, but he would rather work on the grass, even if it's a lumpy baseball field, than deal with the challenges that come with to his body working on turf.
And one of those challenges is, you know, the turf grabs your foot. And as we saw at the combine with Andrew Voorhees, you know, the offensive lineman from USC, not, you know, just basically doing position drills, the turf grabs his foot. He's torn it. He tears a knee ligament during combine workouts. He's not going to be playing in 2023. So your offensive lineman that you work out, they don't want to take that chance of just maybe turning the wrong way or putting their foot in the wrong position. And the turf grabs their foot and they go one way and the leg doesn't follow with them or the knee doesn't follow with them.
Yeah. Well, look at David Ajabo last year at his pro day, right? Just doing drills, you know, Sidney Jones a few years ago at the University of Washington, all on turf.
And the Ajabo injury is interesting because it's an Achilles injury. And part of the turf beyond the turf with the twist and rotation challenges is the impact. Especially the big linemen, right? They're slamming 300 plus pounds onto the surface each and every time they run or take a pass set rep, and it hurts the knees. And Achilles injuries happen a lot of times from abrupt, sudden impact, and that's something that the turf does to the body. That grass has a little bit more give with it. So something we're going to keep an eye on. The NFLPA has done a really good job, in my opinion. This is the other thing I want to talk about with this topic, guys. The NFLPA has done a really good job, this year, in putting out these surveys as a way of putting pressure on the NFL teams to make certain changes. In fact, Andy Reid was asked about the player survey that talked about the training services being subpar, and he had to answer for that in a press conference. Do you think we're going to see more of this from the NFLPA?
Yeah, it's a flex that they can use because they know at the end of the day, they don't have the power to do a lot of things that they want to do. But if they can point a spotlight to certain things where they think there can be change, I think they can do it. And this is a way to exert external pressure on the NFL to get some things that they might not be able to get otherwise.
I completely agree. I mean, the NFLPA is not like the Major League Baseball Union, where they basically, you know, rule the day and call the shots. And the NFLPA does more reaction rather than leading. And, you know, if this can get them, these surveys can get them something that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get through the negotiation, why not?
Yeah, we'll see. Look, the players union is not the greatest players union amongst the league sports. Let's just put it that way. And there has been some, dissatisfaction with the union's leadership performance in years past. So hopefully this is a way of being able to get better conditions.
Yeah. And Brett, along those lines, I will say this, because the NFLPA takes a lot of heat. I think the one thing they do well is that they pick their battles wisely. Okay. Like they know, people like, oh, let's get Roger out of discipline, which he kind of is now. Or let's do this. The NFLPA always says, look, what can benefit the most players the most? And that's their objective. Like, we got to get rid of the salary cap or the franchise tag. Well, that's going to affect one or two players, maybe 5 to 10 players every offseason, every year, right? And what the NFLPA can do, if they can limit practices, which they think, and limit the hitting in practices, or maybe address the turf issues at some of these things, that's a win where the NFLPA says, okay, this can be a benefit to not 5 or 10 players, but to every player in the league and potentially elongate their careers. So those are the battles that they try and pick, because those are the ones they think they can win. And they're also the ones that they benefit the most players, instead of making very specific points while they have a big sort of target on them and they have a flashpoint of sort of noise and buzz around it, but don't really help a lot.
That's a really great and fair point to bring up. You're 100% correct. In years past, that had been a point of dissension for some of the players who are, sort of in that middle and below tier on NFL rosters, that they didn't feel represented the way the top tier players were. So really, really good point there. Before we get into more NFL draft, centric topics, also interesting that came out today is that the Kansas City Chiefs are asking receiver prospects in this year's draft, not just to meet with them at their facilities, but to go down to Fort Worth, Texas at the TCU facilities and throw a couple balls around with Patrick Mahomes. Trey, I can't recall another franchise sort of doing this, and maybe it's because not every franchise has a Patrick Mahomes, but this is a pretty interesting development. Would you agree?
I would, and because one of the guys that's there is Zay Flowers, who is on Mel Kiper's board, is the 10th overall prospect, and a lot of people think he's going to be the first wide receiver taken off the draft. Now, there's a couple of things that I find interesting about this. Number one, obviously, this is Brett Veach doing his due diligence, because they have 10 picks in the 2023 draft. There's no way the Chiefs are using all 10 picks in this draft. So he's trying to figure out, is this guy, Zay Flowers, worth the idea of potentially moving up if he's going to be there with one of our trade partners, if we can move up. They have the capital to do it. But it just shows you that the Chiefs understand they just re-signed Justin Watson. But right now their receiver room is Kadarius Toney, who they think is going to be a star. Sky Moore, who came on late last year. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who really stepped up in the AFC Championship game when every other receiver was injured. And Justin Watson. That's about it. Now, they have the kid Ross out of Clemson from a couple of years ago who can't stay healthy, but when he is healthy at Clemson, he was phenomenal. They're thin at wide receiver, thinner than they were even last year. So they know that they need to make some moves. And I think they're still somewhat in the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes. But if they can package some of this stuff and potentially get someone like a Zay Flowers, and I think you do this because you have Patrick Mahomes. And when I say that, like Kadarius Toney was asked, was he excited about coming to the Chiefs? And that clip went viral, Patrick Mahomes, and they have a selling point that not any other team does. So I'm not sure if Zay Flowers would go work out or anybody else, but because it's Patrick Mahomes, I think they're interested in that. Now I am curious, Tony, and maybe you know this, if I'm his agent, I know his agent, I can't remember his name, like what sort of insurance are you taking out to make sure something doesn't happen to Zay Flowers? Like, I saw the video of him running those routes and everything looked great, but my God, that is a roll of the dice if you don't have some indemnification there, right? We just talked about this with David Ajabo and some of these other Ben Voorhees and all these guys that have had these injuries. I mean, like, it worked out, but my God, I would want to make sure my dude was
covered. Tony, before you say anything, it should be noted that I've trained players in the TCU indoor facility. It's turf, just to bring it full circle. But go ahead, Tony.
I mean, there's got to be some sort of loss of value a policy or something like that. Or there's got to be either that or what's going to happen is, as often does, the player's going to have to sign a waiver to say that, you know, if he runs the routes and he gets hurt, you know, it's on him. It's an interesting point. And I see going both ways because a lot of times at these workouts, the players have to sign waivers. But getting back to, you know, these receivers coming in and working out, listen, the Kansas City Chiefs want to be the New England Patriots. They don't want to be the Indianapolis Colts. And what do I mean by that? You know, Indianapolis had two star franchise quarterbacks, Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, and they won one Super Bowl title. You know, the Patriots just won title after title after title. And that's what the Kansas City Chiefs want to make sure that they do with this great quarterback. They want to be the New England Patriots. They do not want to be the Indianapolis Colts. And 10 years down the road, they've got two Super Bowl championships to show for it rather than, you know, a handful of rings.
Yeah, it is interesting to see. And like you guys said, you know, I don't think the Falcons could convince Zay Flowers to show up to catch passes from Desmond Ridder. No offense to Desmond Ridder. But I think
that's just reality. Yeah,
reality. That's the way it is. So we'll see. Tony, I want to come back to you on this in a second, but let me get some ads in here to pay the bills, as they say. And by the way, I said we're a week away from the NFL draft, and no, we're not having NFL games, but there is still a ton going on around the sports world, and you can get involved in the action by going over to Caesars Sportsbook. You can do it at Caesars.com, or you can download the Caesars Sportsbook app, but go to either one of those places and place your first wager. And if you lose, you're going to get 100% of your stake bet as a free bet. And you can do that up to $1,250. So you could risk up to $1,200+. And win or lose, you're going to get 100% of that back on your first wager. Additionally, you're going to get 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits. Both things are exclusively provided by Caesar Sportsbook. Can't get those anywhere else. And you can get this by redeeming this offer using promo code PFNCZR. That's PFNCZR. And redeem that at Caesars.com or by downloading the Caesars Sportsbook app. And while we're talking about a lot of things going on in the sports world, we can still talk about football and have some fun winning some money because Underdog Fantasy is still running best ball tournaments. Even right now, you can get involved in a best ball draft. Start drafting now and get up to a $100 deposit bonus by using promo code PFN when you sign up for Underdog Fantasy. You can do that at underdogfantasy.com or download the Underdog Fantasy app. Once again, that's promo code PFN. Use that to get a shot at a $100 deposit bonus. Tony, I want to come back to you real quick on the Chiefs wide receiver situation. What more can you tell us about what the Chiefs might be thinking about doing as they sit there with pick number 31 in the first round?
Yeah, I posted a story yesterday, Pro Football Network. They like Quentin Johnston. And if Quentin Johnston, the big receiver from TCU, and if he starts the fall, they're prone, you know, Trey talked about moving up to get Zay Flowers. Yeah. They would want to move up to get Quentin Johnston, the bigger receiver from TCU. He's big, he's explosive. He's a guy who's a playmaker, but he's very rough around the edges. The other receiver that I heard just yesterday that they really like is Jalin Hyatt out of Tennessee. Probably not going to move up to get Jalin Hyatt. They could probably sit there at 31. I've said for a couple of weeks now, Jalin Hyatt is likely to fall out of the first round. Well, he may not. He may end up with the Kansas City Chiefs with that 31st pick. It's looking more and more like the Chiefs, who a lot of people thought were going to take, could potentially take an edge rusher in the first round, are going to use that pick, whether they trade up or whether they stay at 31, to take one of the receivers. So we talked about Zay Flowers. You got to add Quentin Johnston of TCU in the mix. You got to add Jalin Hyatt into the mix. Johnston, they'd have to move up for. Jalin Hyatt, they could likely sit there at 31. He falls into their laps.
Tony, real quickly before you go in there, that's interesting because they definitely need an edge presence. They do. Carlos Dunlap was on a one-year deal. Frank Clark is no longer there. But Frank Clark also isn't anywhere else. which I find very interesting at this point. And I just wonder, this is total speculation on my part here. I just wonder if the Chiefs and Frank Clark know something that the rest of us don't. Right? Like one of these things that, you know, hey, if it's not working out, we can always figure something out with you here if you don't get the numbers that you thought you wanted. And look, Frank, we talked about this when he left. Frank Clark is an interesting case because his regular season numbers are okay. They're not great. They're just okay. But my God, does that guy show out in the postseason? And I just, the longer this goes without Frank Clark having a home, and to your point about them thinking and focusing on a wide receiver, it just makes me feel innately that they may know something about Frank Clark potentially coming back that nobody else knows.
Yeah. Just on that real quick, I am not uncertain that is certainly in the cards, and that both the Kansas City Chiefs and Frank Clark would absolutely welcome a return. Frank,
just put a pin in that one. Just put a pin in that one. That's all. I'm
Frank
saying.
Looks at Andy as a father figure, and we'll see. There's also another veteran who hasn't signed anywhere, who was instrumental to that Chiefs Super Bowl run.
Jerick McKinnon
may or may not find his way back.
Jerick McKinnon, kind of same thing happened last year, if you recall.
We'll see how that plays out. But I do want to talk real quick about the wide receiver aspect there. You know, the report was that Zay Flowers was asked by the Chiefs to go there, but Quentin Johnson was actually the first wide receiver who the Chiefs asked to throw passes with Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, they're doing it at TCU. That's where Quentin Johnston is was a player at. So it'll be interesting to see what they do at that wide receiver position. I can tell you that Justin Ross, we mentioned him. The question is, can he stay healthy? But Patrick Mahomes seems to love him, had some glowing comments about him too the other day. So a lot to happen. A lot of people think the Chiefs could be looking tackle at the bottom of the first round, and it looks like wide receiver is going to be, you know, the favorite. So we'll see how that plays out. The other thing, Tony, I want to get into as we work our way towards talking more about what's going to happen at the NFL draft. Unfortunately, we always have to talk about players who are hurt, players who have medical red flags. And every year there's a player that pops up that maybe we're not thinking of. Who's the latest that you're hearing about that could have a medical red flag concern?
Yeah, you remember the combine medical rechecks just took place last week. The guy that I'm hearing the red flags are popping up on right now are Tajay Spears, the running back from Tulane. Somebody said to me yesterday he's got Jay Ajayi knees. And if you remember, Jay Ajayi from Boise State was a highly rated prospect in 2015. People thought third round, ended up falling in the fifth round because of the medicals, because
of the
situation.
Which played out a few years into his NFL career.
Yeah. And Tajay Spears had a major knee injury in 2020, which ended his season at Tulane. And I think everybody has Tajay Spears justifiably graded as a day two selection right now. From what I'm hearing, he's probably going to fall into the third the third day of the draft. He's been red flagged. He hasn't failed, from what I heard. There's a difference. A red flag means that a team is going to give you a 1-2 round penalty, if you will, or put it add that to your grade because of the medical issues. And that's what I'm hearing is happening right now, or has happened with Tajay Spears. But again, you know, medicals. It's not the same for every team. It's not broad brush. You know, one team will look at it and they'll be okay with it. Another team will say, forget about it. You know, we're not taking this guy until the sixth and seventh round if he's available because of the medical condition. And what they're usually looking for is he going to be healthy to sign that second contract? If he's going to be healthy to sign that second contract, that's okay. If it's not, if he's not going to make it to the second contract, that is a medical.
See, Dolphins, Saints, Drew Brees for differences of opinion between NFL medical staffs. It's really interesting. Jay Ajayi had the knee issue, and his gait was so off. He ran inverted. His knees were bow-legged as he ran, which made him extra susceptible to knee injuries, and it played out, unfortunately, after his short stint with the Eagles, helping them to that Super Bowl run. Tony, the other thing I want to get into, and I kind of teased a little at the beginning of the show, is the new cognitive testing. We're all familiar with the Wonderlic. We've heard of the Wonderlic for decades with cognitive testing at the NFL Combine for the NFL Draft. There's a new cognitive test that's being used these last couple of years. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and kind of you know, more about how it impacts an NFL, a potential NFL player?
The S2 cognitive test, which a lot of people haven't seen. I haven't seen it. I've talked to people. They don't know, but this is the new, one of the new measures that teams are looking to. They're having players take the test, and they're looking at the scores, and they are basically using that as part of the scouting process. Now, what is the S2 cognitive test? I'm told it's sort of an indication if you're able to process things on many levels, if you're a complex thinker. And the test is designed to see how somebody may react under adversity. Now, why is everybody running to this S2 cognitive test? Well, because Brock Purdy took this test last year and scored incredibly well. And they're looking at how Mr. Irrelevant did at the as the last pick of the draft in 2022, and then led the Niners, you know, really through the NFC Championship until he got hurt. And they're saying, well, this is the new indicator of mental abilities, the ability to think on different levels, be a complex thinker, think under adversity. That's what you're using. Obviously, it's going to be important for defensive backs. It's going to be important. It's going to be important for everybody. Important for linebackers. Important for running backs. But they're really focusing on the quarterbacks with this S2 cognitive test.
Yeah, and there's actually two tests, right? There's the S2. There's also something called the PAT test that they give them at the combine. And Tony, you know, I think the PAT test is a scale of 1 to 10 where they measure people. I think the S2 test is 1 to 100, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Tony, you mentioned Brock Purdy having scored well and that leading to, you know, a lot of people saying, hey, look, he scored well on this test. And now look, as a Mr. Irrelevant, he's, you know, helped the Niners all the way to the NFC Championship game. Do you know who happened to have scored well out of this year's draft prospects?
Well, I do, as a matter of fact. and you know, Tanner McKee of Stanford, I've told, scored off the charts, as you would expect, a guy from Stanford, you know, Ivy League of the West. Bryce Young scored incredibly well, as we all would expect him to, because if you watch this show, I've been saying all along, you know, you can see it on the film, but during the interviews, I've said that Bryce Young has been characterized as being a genius. Aiden O'Connell of Purdue scored very, very well. A mature guy. A lot of people like, you know, the way he processes things and sees the field. Jaren Hall of BYU scored well. Will Levis of Kentucky scored very, very well on this test. And I'm told Dorian Thompson-Robinson of UCLA also got a really decent score.
Tony, I noticed there's a name you didn't say, and this is a guy that we've been talking about and at one point was favored to be the number one overall pick, who's had a very steep fall from grace. What do you know about C.J. Stroud?
Scores were really bad, really bad. I don't want to, you know, go really deep into it. I don't want to demean the young man, but the test scores were not good. It's given people a lot of pause for C.J. Stroud. This is the reason why we're starting to see separation between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud. Like you said, a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about the Carolina Panthers taking C.J. Stroud with the first pick. Now all the talk is about Bryce Young, and it sort of turned very quickly. This is the reason why, because Bryce Young was at the high end of that S2 cognitive test, and C.J. Stroud was unfortunately at the other end. So that is the situation, or that is why the situation is playing out.
Yeah, and I think we need to be clear here. This is just one indicator, right? But the way the NFL works and the way the NFL is managed, adjudicated, refereed, officiated, you know, critical thinking becomes a really big part of it. And it's a concern if someone doesn't do as well as you would have liked them to do. You mentioned all the other positions, but specifically that position. But again, this is just one. If it was an exact science, Brock Purdy's of the world would work out all the time, right? It was a home run last time. So it's just another factor. And this is the impetus of why we do all this grinding for the draft, because you want to leave no stone unturned. Like, let's go back for the recent quarterback drafts, okay? It's too early for Kenny Pickett. We think it will be fine. It's trending in the right direction. 2021, the first three picks of the draft were all quarterbacks, and only one of them we feel good about.
Yep.
Right? Obviously, we feel Trevor Lawrence, now that he has a real NFL coach and not a fake one, and has made a massive leap in the second year. Garrett Wilson is being relegated and Trey Lance is being offered to anyone who will take him, even though the Niners gave up three first-round picks for him. 2020 looks good. Joe Burrow, Tua, if he can stay healthy, Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts in the second round. 2019, Daniel Jones, Kyler Murray, And then you go 2015 to 2018, only one of the top two quarterbacks drafted in each of those drafts is with the team that drafted him, and that's Patrick Mahomes in 2017. So it is you're putting a lot into this quarterback basket, and you do everything you can to make sure you're on the right side and not on the miss side when it comes to drafting these guys.
You know, I talked with a quarterback guru, for lack of a better term, over the past 2 days about this, and he says – what this test is, it's an outlier that makes you dig deeper. So if a guy scores really low, it makes you do more work on that guy. And what he said is imagine you see a quarterback that is a great scrambler and is very elusive on the college level. Then he goes to the combine and he runs 5 seconds in the 40. And his shuttle time is terrible. And his three cone time is awful. You go back and you wonder, Why is this guy really just this unathletic and was able to exploit the defenses on the college level? Or is this a concern? Let's look at C.J. Stroud for a second. I mean, I've said all along, my concern with C.J. Stroud is, which C.J. Stroud are we getting on Sunday? Are we getting the guy that sliced and diced the Georgia defense during the college football semifinal game? Are we getting the guy that sliced and diced a real good Utah defense in the 2022 Ohio State Rose Bowl, or are we getting the guy who couldn't get the ball in the end zone against Michigan and got smacked by the Wolverines 2 years in a row? The guy who was a slow starter against Iowa, the guy who, you know, struggled to beat Northwestern. Which one are we getting? And is this test an indicator of that? I've stated all along that I think that they mismanaged C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. They put the handcuffs on him too much. They never really developed him. The C.J. Stroud that we saw against Georgia, I think that we could have seen more often if they took the handcuffs off him. But the results of this test make you think, well, maybe they had to put the handcuffs on him because they were concerned about letting him run the offense and take over the way he did against Georgia. Like Trey say, it's an inexact science, and you're never going to know. And what these tests also do is they want to look at where your starting point is, what you did in college, the type of offense that you ran. And these tests sometimes help determine your aptitude. If you're able to get to the point where they want you to be at the NFL, if you're able to mentally basically handle all those duties. We're not going to know, it's not, the question's not going to be answered on draft day. The question's going to be answered 2 or 3 years down the road.
Right.
When Stroud is wearing a Houston Texans uniform or uniform of another team playing on Sundays.
Yeah, I always say you need 3 years to evaluate a draft. 3 years. We all want to do it the year after. But
the year
you need
after,
three
we
years
get,
to
we get
a
draft grades the moment the picks come in.
Guilty.
But
they made me do it. They made
me. Well, look, the interesting thing, and Tony, I like the way you said this, and I want to repeat it for everybody, because obviously, you know, if you're in tune with the news, CJ Stroud's been in the news over the last 24 hours because of comments that were made about him, and the cognitive test that we're talking about. I love the way you said this. It is a concern, but it's a concern that doesn't remove you from the draft board. It makes the team dig deeper. And in that digging deeper process, teams may come to the conclusion that they're okay with it because what they've dug deep and found out more, they're okay with where they want to take you. And so we'll see how the process plays out for CJ Stroud. On the opposite side of that, the test is confirming for what we've been hearing, and Tony, what you've been reporting about Bryce Young. He is a genius and a savant, apparently. So we'll see how that plays out. What I do want to ask you, Tony, is what does this mean for the dynamic in the order in which we think the quarterbacks may be taken? Is there a world in which an Anthony Richardson sort of leapfrogs CJ Stroud and becomes maybe that second or third quarterback taken?
I don't think it's out of the question at this point. I mean, where a week ago when we did the show, I would have said you're nuts. Now, from what I'm hearing, I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, I didn't hear if Richardson did good or bad on the test, but I think what you're going to start to see is more and more of the talking heads are going to start to put Anthony Richardson above DJ Stroud. I also think that this is another reason why we hear why the Houston Texans are more than happy to move out of that second spot.
Correct.
This is the end result of that. And, you know, when the Texans announced that that second pick was up for bid, the pick was up for bids, you thought, well, okay, if they get a great deal, they'll move down. Well, now we know the reason why they are willing to move down.
Yeah. And again, to Richardson's point, look, I hope the kid has an unbelievable
career on that
because he's an athletic freak. But like, there is no player in the draft whose floor is potentially lower and whose ceiling is potentially higher. So to me, if someone's going to take a flyer on Anthony Richardson in the first round, let alone the top 10, you better have a staff and a general manager that are really secure in their positions. That they don't think that this is a draft that's going to make or break their careers with the teams that they're currently in. A guy, a front office and a coaching staff that are willing to take the plunge on Anthony Richardson would be a unit that feels pretty good about the solidity of their job security.
The two teams that I think make a ton of sense if you're feeling good, you know, the Indianapolis Colts, you know, with Shane Steichen there and what he did with Jalen Hurts, who similar tools, similar rawness coming out. Maybe the Ravens, but yeah, to your point, you better know because otherwise.
Seattle Seahawks as well. I mean, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider fired. So the you got. I agree 1,000% with what Trey said. You know, you've got to have some job security. You've got to feel safe if you take this guy early on, because
let's finish up with this, because another name that you said scored well. I believe you said Will Levis did, and I'd love to kind of Tony get your thoughts and Trey too on the Will Levis test scores and what we see from him on tape versus the CJ Stroud test scores and what we see from him on tape and what that could mean in this first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, Will Levis is a smart guy. He graduated from Penn State early. He scored well on this S2 cognitive test. But then you watch the film, and I think to a man, everybody in the league will tell you he doesn't see the field all that well. He doesn't read defenses all that well, especially compared to C.J. Stroud. Will Levis, 23 interceptions over the past 2 years. C.J. Stroud, 12 interceptions over the past 2 years. So Stroud does a much better job protecting the football. And that's where it's in exact science. Are you taking the guy who scored really well on the test, who graduated from college early, but makes a lot of questionable decisions on the field, versus the guy who scored incredibly poorly on the test, but did a relatively good job protecting the football?
Yeah, I mean, if you the tape, there's no comparison to the tape. I mean, C.J. Stroud's tape is infinitely better than Will Levis's tape. And this is where the grinding comes in, because it's not about this is what I see. It's about what traits do I see that I think can translate to the next level. Because it was about highlights, all the Big Ten, all the top Power Five conferences, all their stars would be stars in the NFL. And it isn't that way. So the hardest part of talent evaluation, and Tony knows this better than anybody, is what traits do I see and I can define that I believe, regardless of what I see on the field in college, will translate successfully to the NFL. And that is the most important thing. You are looking for defined traits that you believe will carry over and continue to be successful at a much different and much higher level of competition of football.
And you've got 32 completely different environments and decision makers who have their own way of doing things, trying to make those decisions. And what one team thinks they can coach and value and what they think is important is entirely different than what another organization's team of decision makers may feel is important. So that is why we get the great fun and excitement we do out of the NFL draft, because it is anybody's guess as to what will happen. Now, next week, I've been told that Tony and myself will be co-hosting another live draft show. Extravaganza. First round of the NFL draft. Tony will be bringing cough drops with him this year. And I will be covering for every bathroom break that we need to do. Now, the great thing about watching the draft with us is that we have the picks before the networks do. You will find out which team takes what player minutes, full minutes, before it gets announced on the cable television network. So make sure you tune into us. We'll be live streaming. We may get an appearance from Trey. We haven't worked that out yet, but
I'll be there. I'll be there.
Love having the three of us there. And so we will see you guys next week for the first round of the NFL draft. And guys, it's going to be fun because we talked about a lot of information and we still have more questions. We'll see if they get answered on Thursday.
We do.
See you guys.
Can't wait, guys. We'll see you then.